I mean, you hate to say, not that we told you so, because obviously we both said they would win the series, because frankly, that's the point of doing a Jays podcast, right? You do a Jays podcast and you come on and you say they're going to lose in two. Not great, but I will say for the record, I did take a moment on Tuesday's episode, 2 days ago, to say that, you know, season could be over as of Wednesday evening. You did, when we were talking a month and a half ago, how long ago was that? You were like, I think the logical end of the season is being swept in two games by the Minnesota Twins. And I laughed. And here we are, Thursday night. We've taken a full day. Jays are over. Jays are done. Season's over. It's finished. So,
yeah, it's one of those things that, like, on the one hand, it feels weird that, like, it's already done. But on the other hand, it's like, yeah, of course. How could it have gone any other way?
So this – how could it have gone any other way, Jake, is exactly right. There's one thing that I'm very happy about with this is that we can now stop – we can get rid of the other part of what we've been talking about every time we talk about the 2023 Blue Jays, where we'd go, this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. But, you know, could all work out.
Right, well, yeah.
We now know that it didn't. And
we now know they're a fraudulent team.
Not even fraudulent. Fraudulent implies that they were of a certain caliber and weren't actually that good.
Yeah, okay. They were the third wildcard team then.
They were the sixth best team in the American League, evidently.
Yeah.
Couldn't win 90 games. Couldn't hit when it mattered. And turns out, yeah, exactly right. The blessing and the curse is it went exactly the way that everybody who had a passing snide comment about the team thought it would go. If you have any preconceived notion about this team, it ended up being right. Right? That's the ridiculousness of it. Any take you may have had about the Blue Jays ended up being totally correct. By now, you probably already know it's a 3-1 and a 2-0 loss. One big moment in each game that is pretty clear. This is nothing. And Jake, I mean this in a positive way. I mean this as a compliment. I want you to take what I'm about to say. I want you to take it as a compliment. Okay. Sometimes there's nothing more frustrating than the Jake was right. Slowly happening in front of me.
You understand what I'm saying? I understand what you're saying. Cause I also watch these games.
Cause you're right about Minnesota. And then you were right about the last two times they had these big moments, the exact thing that we had concerns about was the thing that bit them. And you talked about it last week, and you talked about it before, with like every year has had these signature moments where it's like, yeah, that's all the problems rolled into one right there, right? That's all the – and we saw it in both of these games. We had a John Schneider moment, and we can call it John Schneider. We can call it the front office. We can call it management, however you want to do it. We'll get into it. And we had base running mistakes from the two most important players on this team. And I will get into it as well. I don't want to say everything. We'll get into it later. But some real stuff was reinforced for me. I feel I've had a full day of like collecting my thoughts on it. I feel pretty passionate about what we saw. And not surprised, but like ready to at least let go of the like okay but parts of this conversation, and let's just talk about this team for what they are and what they accomplished, which is nothing, and talk about them what they are, which is a team that clearly had a flaw somewhere, and it's okay if you don't know exactly what that flaw is. We'll try to figure it out, but something is rotten somewhere here, because things crumbled on the outside and inside here, and I get the natural inclination is to be like baseball was random, and I acknowledge that baseball was random, but also like there's some common things that are eating away at what should be a success. And Jake, maybe before I throw it to you, maybe part of it, I'm realizing myself, maybe part of it is just throwing away that part of my brain that is like, what's the thing that was like stopping them from being the team they should have been, right? Because I think this is where all the frustration is. All the frustration is like it should be a good team. It should be. They should be winning. Should is this Blue Jays team. And maybe that's my problem. Maybe I need to remove should from my brain. And this team is exactly as good as this. And that was the record. And that was the postseason. And now it's over. Need to move on. What do you think? Sorry, that's 5 minutes of me. Fucking...
I mean, it's good we have a podcast for this, because I think a lot of things about many different things about the last 2 days and this team and everything in general. And about the discourse surrounding this team, which I also want to get into a little bit. Yeah, I mean, like, game two was basically a greatest hits package of the 2023 Blue Jays. You could say that game one was just like mostly competitive. If you want to make the argument that like they were slightly unlucky because Chapman's ball, when he hit it 401 feet for an out with the bases loaded, but that was caught at the wall. You want to argue that like if that's an inch different, then it's a different game. That's fair. That's fine. I think they just couldn't fucking score, but like I get the argument. But like game two was just every similar to game two last year, but very different. But in the sense that like every last year it was like, oh, the bullpen, oh, Bo's defense, oh, you know, they're having too much fun.
Front running. Yeah. Front runners was the problem.
And then all that. And then game two this year was bad base running, bad managerial decisions, great pitching, as you'd expect. No hitting, no situational hitting. I think I want to start there. I think I want to start the situational hitting, because I think that speaks to one of the larger things that are rotten at the core of this franchise, as you were alluding to. And had a good talk on the tweet machine today with our friends BK and James G, where I was ready to leap in and you know, fire Atkins, etc., which I'm still not there. But good conversation about how a lot of the issues this year you can't put on the front office. There's a lot you can, for sure. But we'll get... excuse me. Sorry, I'm also sick, so sorry if I sound like shit and I'm sniffling. But
it's perfect.
We'll get to the Atkins faults later. But for this, to me, I look at the situational hitting and all throughout the season, but especially the last 2 days, and especially game one. So, and you saw this last year as well throughout the season, and in game one of last year's series, which they also lost, which is why I think this is not a like random unlucky occurrence. There's just an awful lot of they're getting something going, followed by the two worst at bats you've ever seen.
Crazy.
And I think it's a matter of, I mean, a lot of it's approach, a lot of it's, I guess a lot of it's coaching. Like, I have some numbers here just for the season. The Jays were sixth last in all of Major League Baseball in 3-0 counts seen. The teams below them were the White Sox, the Royals, the Angels, the Rockies, and the Nationals. That was 3-0 count percentage seen. They were only ninth last in actual 3-0 count seen. So, got the Angels, the Athletics below them, in addition to the other ones. Swinging on a 3-0 count, they are seventh in baseball. Seventh most 3-0 counts swung at. 2-0 count seen, they are exactly league average. 3-1 count seen, they are once again in the middle of the pack. Strikeouts looking, they are exactly league average. Strikeouts swinging, they are sixth last again. So, oh, sorry, that's my mistake. Strikeouts swinging, they're actually sixth best in the league. That's organized weird. But the point is, this team has a very aggressive approach to the plate. They've clearly been, you know, doing that for a couple years now. And there's some guys who can get away with it. Like Bo Bichette is an example of a guy who can go with it because he just makes contact with the ball. Like that's just basically all he does. And that's great. And it's productive. I think he was like fourth or fifth in contact percentage on strikes thrown this year. But there's clearly a bunch of guys on this team, and I'm including Vlad, who are way too aggressive without a plan. And it happens again and again in big spots. And we saw it, I think it was in game one. They had two men on, second and third. And then I think it was Vlad and then, or it was, no, Vlad got on. It was Biggio and Bichette.
And just had the worst at-bat of the season in the eighth inning of game one.
Three strikes, three pitches. Biggio not much better. And, you know, you can point to good pitching from the Twins bullpen. As we talked about on Tuesday, they have they had the best team ERA in the league. So a good pitching team. But also, like, you made the point on Twitter that when it comes down to it, and again, we can say this last year as well, when it came down to it, the other team's best players showed up and made the best plays. And I said,
so I'll pick it up right there. Yeah. Because the beautiful irony is the Twins did the Twins and Blue Jays are like the exact same team, right? Michael A. Taylor would have fit in perfectly as a DRS boy. It was great pitching. It was very good defense. And then you hope that your best players do the things that make the difference. And these two teams, if you take away the two best players from the Twins, take away Royce Lewis and Carlos Correa, it's still 0-0 in game one, right? Those are the only guys that did anything in this entire series. Correa made two unbelievably nice plays defensively, one to throw out Bo Bichette, one to throw out Vladimir Guerrero Jr. By all accounts, he identified, called for, and put on that back pick tag, and he is the one who makes the barehanded play to throw out Bo, who slows down approaching third and then sees the ball and then speeds up and tries to score, just saying. And that's their best player and the Blue Jays' two best players involved in those plays directly. The biggest swings that any plays had negatively against the Blue Jays in either of these games. And then the other great player for the Twins is Royce Lewis, and he had two home runs, and that was it. Because the only difference in the entire series. And
it's also like, and like we said this last year too, Julio showed up, Luis Castillo showed up, the Seattle bullpen showed up. Like it just not that. And I will say they were canceled out by individual errors, but like Vlad and Bo had their moments. Springer was pretty good, I thought, overall. But it wasn't enough, because I'll also say, and this is not a knock on him because I genuinely don't know who else you put in that spot, but like, how seriously are we taking you with Kevin Biggio hitting fifth in the playoffs?
Right. You have Belt go 0-8 with 5 Ks in the 2-hole. I mean, listen, yeah, Vlad and Bo, to me, the massive size of the mistakes outweighs the like Vlad hit a leadoff double.
I agree. Especially the pick. The getting picked off after is telling everyone to calm down.
And Bo running through a stop sign. Like, this is the stuff. This is the stuff where it makes the Vlad and Bo conversation really hard. Because, you know, they can hit, right? And no doubt about it. And Bo, we had a bit of the conversation before because he plays shortstop and in such an important defensive position that, like, there's just more to it than hitting. And that's been a big part of the Vlad problem this year. He did some really big regression at first base. He did a lot of what happened in the second game of this series, a lot of over aggressive base running, a lot of bad base running, a lot of like, he just sort of shrugged it off. I feel like, yeah, he's being aggressive. Well, not when you're the trail runner in game two of a wild card series and you haven't scored at all. It's just not an acceptable way to be time to be asleep when the other team's best player has you read like a book and you don't even check over your shoulder. That is the difference. Like, and the way they built the team, we talked about this from spring training. We were like, the big bet this year is very clearly that Vlad is an MVP candidate, and he's not. He plum isn't, because he didn't do nearly enough. He didn't do nearly enough, and the whole thing doesn't fall on his feet. But the whole thing is built on those top three guys. It's built on Bichette, Springer, and Vlad. And we've had our qualms about the depth and all of that stuff. The depth did, for the most part, their job. They played excellent defense. The pitching was very great. The bullpen was as good as it needed to be. They upgraded the bullpen. They made the moves to the minor league guys to give the fringe pieces a jolt when they needed it. They had each one of those guys, as bad as some of them looked at times. Chapman had a streak in the season. Merrifield had a streak in this season. Schneider had a streak in this season. Clement had a streak this season. Biggio had a streak this season. Kiermaier had a streak this season. Jano had a streak this season. Everybody, every one of those guys, there's not one guy that was called up that isn't Vlad Bo or Schneider that didn't have a hot streak at some point this year that lasted 2 weeks to a month. And you could not possibly ask more from those guys. And when you said earlier, like, it's hard to find fault with the front office, I agree, because the depth guys basically did all you could possibly ask them to. They've had an unbelievable job in the last 3 years as well of finding one-year contracts, of finding Kevin Kiermaier, of finding Marcus Semien, of making the Matt Chapman trade, of going and getting all kinds of pieces to supplant this team. You can say jury still out on Varsho, but even then it's not like a 0-100 loss. It's maybe like 25-75 or 60-40. Everything else has been super tilted in their favor. And Vlad doesn't do enough. He just doesn't to justify everything else being built around him. And Bichette, as you said, he's very talented and he's made some great improvements. And I think he's a great player. And then sometimes he just completely out of his shoes. You're like, what am I even seeing in this at bat? And then the worry is, of course, Springer's fucking lost a step and we're on the downslope. And I just, you know, it would be great to be able to, I would love to come on here and have, you know, fire Atkins, this unacceptable, this and that. But I'm looking at this and I just go, I've just, the star players didn't make a play. There was nobody made a play. Everybody, and maybe this is the crux of it, right? Is they had a team all year that like did the right thing defensively and was very solid and made the right plays, but like nobody had a moment. Nobody seized the moment. Nobody made a play. And I get the it running up in the face of the aggressiveness that we are lamenting, but there's got to be, you have to be talented enough. You have to be like, we're past the like excuses and handling it and learning. Just your star ball players playing in the biggest stage. And if you don't come through, people get upset. When the whole thing is built around you coming through and the other team's guys come through, and we're talking about the third time through, they're 0-6 in the playoffs. And we have to dig at it and pick at it. And I just keep coming back to the star guys. I just keep coming back to like Minnesota's did and ours didn't. And that was it. That's the main one. Do you have more on that? Because there's plenty of other things to talk about with this organization.
I mean, sort of. I think it sort of leads nicely into the John Schneider conversation and the coaching conversation. Because before we get into the specifics of the Berríos pull, which obviously we're going to get into, but before we get into that, I feel like I wonder, and this is idle speculation, but of everything we've just been talking about over the last two, even a little bit in 2021, but obviously a lot of it was plastered over because they were hitting so many home runs and they were fun and it was fine. But really for the last 2 years, all these things we're talking about, whether it's plate discipline, whether it's blowing through stop base running mistakes, whether it's defensive errors, although like you said, those are a bit pretty locked up this year. Or it's just like the development of, I hate to use the term because it's so Jays talky, but like the baseball IQ of Vlad and Bo, and then bleeding out to the rest of the team. It makes me wonder if there's something, and like, I guess Pete Walker probably gets a pass on this because the pitching's been so good, and like, how can you criticize anything with the pitching really after this season? But it makes me wonder about not just Schneider, but just the overall coaching in the organization. Like, we saw it when all the kids from Buffalo came up and weren't making the stupid mistakes that everyone else does. And not that there isn't an organizational plan of coaching that goes throughout the different levels of play, because there is and there should be, but also that still the individual guys who are giving advice to the individual guys at each level. And, you know, when Ernie Clement can come up and hit 360 and play pretty solid mistake-free defense, and, you know, Schneider had his run and there wasn't a lot of toot blands from those guys, it makes me really, and you know, Schneider's the guy who said in March, like, there's a line between having fun and just being silly, and we've got to cut out the latter. And then you look at these chuckle fucks getting picked off at second base in a do or die playoff game. And it's like, well, like, how much did you really do to make this? Like, yes, everyone has to be held accountable to their individual errors. And like, Schneider's not out there telling Vlad to take a big lead off second with two out and two on. But also, like, club mentality is a thing, and coaching mentality is a thing. And you even see it in Vlad's approach to the plate. And we've talked about this year when guys like, no disrespect to them, because I actually thought they were excellent the last 2 days. But when guys like Buck Martinez and Joe Siddle are very obviously pointing out what's wrong with Vladdy's swing mechanics, and those guys can see it, which means that everyone can see it. And the coaching is, as I mean, I fucking hope the coaching has seen it. But if they have, and it's not getting through to Vlad, yeah, that's partially a Vlad thing, but it's also who's telling them things. Like, maybe these guys need a coach that, I'm not saying which philosophy they need, because I don't know. Like, I'm not saying get old school Mattingly in there, because he's a shitty coach too. But like, maybe they just need different voices. And maybe they need different styles of communication. I don't know. But it seems to me like the consistency of the mistakes over the last 2 years and the consistency of the issues over the last 2 years being so similar, pitching aside, that like clearly something is off. And outside of them just being dumb, unaware baseball players, which like I just don't think you can get to the level they're at and be that. Something isn't connecting and something isn't working to make these things not happen. Because that was the whole point of this year. And it failed horribly.
Yeah, you're right about the whole point thing, right? Guys like Kiermaier, guys like Belt, guys like Varsho, guys like Chapman, guys like Springer. Are supposed to be here for right, that, exactly. Right? They're supposed to be here for.
And that. I will say, I think yeah. That's also a flaw to take it off the coach. But that's also a flaw, I think, with this core of players. Clearly, there is a leadership, coaching, whatever you want to call it, issue. Because you're right. That is why guys like Springer are here. That is what guys like Vlad are supposed to do. And clearly, it's not getting done.
So I don't know if it's. You know, I don't know if it's one of those things where they tried everything, and it's just like eventually the guy has to listen and he has to learn and he has to want to be a part of it. It's hard to not jump back to the like if Vlad has to have every single thing a certain way. You know, quite a bit of production is going to have to come the other way to justify all that attention, all that behavior, and all that work. And he was great in 2021, and not just in a like. Fluky way, like 40 plus tanks, 1,000 OPS, was a really, really special
second
player.
Second MVP voting to literally the greatest player on the planet. Like,
so, you know, we're at the coaching conversation, and it's going to be easy to make this about one decision. It's going to be easy to make this about the decision to pull Berríos after, was it 12 batters? 47 pitches. And listen, the thing that is annoying me about this right now, and has been for the most part of the day, and I thought I would wait, and I think you agree with me on this. I'm not sure. I'll test it out, though. The first instinct right in your brain is to go, what the fuck is Schneider doing, right? And then there's the second part of you, or even people that you don't know that are replying to you, that are like, come on, you can't think Schneider made this decision on his own. You can't think it wasn't a group-decided decision, right? Which is sort of where I arrive at the problem because, so nobody's to blame then. Amazing. Right. Like what it's such a buy-in to this. They use the word collaboration, but it's such a passing of the buck. Nobody's actually responsible. Nobody actually made the call. We all agreed. So we're all on the line, but we're not all going to fire. We're not all getting fired because we all agreed it was the right thing to do. So you're like, oh, I'm mad at not Schneider. and probably not Atkins because he's the GM, and probably not specifically Walker, and not specific. It's like they've brilliantly orchestrated this thing where like nobody is possibly responsible for this fucking idiotic decision they made.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't care who's responsible for this decision. At a certain point, and this gets into the murky waters. At a certain point, you got to recognize what's happening in front of you. You have to look at what's happening in front of you. It's another thing where it just seems like this team's heads are never on what's happening in front of them. It's never on what the actual results of the actual game they are actually playing. It's mind blowing. This whole year, this whole team, the entire thing was like, don't even worry about today. Don't even worry about what's happening right now. It's all building. It's all process. It's all going somewhere. And we're here at the end and we go, well, every single one of those things fucking backfired and blew up in the face. So who's actually on the line here? Because I guess the idea is it's not Schneider. And you know, the dream manager that tells the front office to go fuck themselves doesn't pass the job interview.
For sure. Can't
say in it. So I don't know. Well, all I know is like in the moment it was like, well, this is what cost us. This is clearly what cost us the postseason. And of course it played out exactly like it did. Vlad gets picked off. The entire team's like, well, we're done in the sixth. Time for 9 straight outs. Where do you land on this? Because just the idea of like, it's one of those hot button issues for me where it's like just the idea that I can't even directly criticize Schneider for it is indicative of, frankly, what I think is part of the problem with the whole 100%. Organization right now. Is there's no direction as to like what is the driving thing here then? Who is making the decisions? What are the decisions? Because you know you have the pitching process, you have the hitting development, you have the Manoah situation, which we can't really touch on, but it's like I would imagine part of his thing is part of this mess is like there's no individual person to talk to. Yeah. There's no single thing. It's this giant conglomerate of people. And, you know, we've heard a lot about that, but just sort of like the idea of there's really it's like blameless. They've made themselves blameless for anything up until the day they had to fire Charlie, of course. For basically the same shit, right? They fired Charlie and everyone was like, yeah, but Charlie wasn't really calling.
That was the whole narrative about Charlie when he got fired.
Now, 2 postseasons in a row, Schneider has pulled the starter too early in the deciding game. And once again, we are here and we are saying, well, it's not really his call. So what the fuck are we doing? What the fuck's going on here? Drives me nuts. Where are you on this?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I have a lot of sort of problems with all of this. I think for one, you're right that the fact that there is seemingly no one to put the blame on is by design. And absolutely is an issue with the whole organization. And this is where I get into more of the get rid of Atkins world. Rather than the individual moves he's made or has not made or whatever, I think that, you know, we were talking leadership a minute ago. At every level of this organization, there is a from the top failure somewhere, whether it's Atkins or it's Schneider or it's Vlad or just at every level. And, you know, we've talked about this year. We've seen it whenever Atkins has to just be a human fucking being, like with the Anthony Bass situation when he was just like a clueless head out there and like clearly doesn't know how to communicate anything other than numbers. Shapiro, in a sense, is kind of similar just on the business side. Like clearly all that matters is revenue numbers and butts and seats, which is his job, to be fair, but also is indicative of the whole thing. And then, yeah, if Schneider isn't responsible for these decisions, then just have the fucking analytics department manage the team. Like, there's no purpose for him there if he's not making the decisions. Or, so, yeah, I guess where I land on this is I hold them all kind of equally responsible because we can't hold anyone more responsible because we don't know. So for me, yes, I agree with you that the ideal manager that will tell the front office kind of shove it when there's something happening in front of them doesn't get the job, which is also an issue to begin with in how this organization is run. Because if that's the way you're running it, and I don't think the Jays is the only organization that works like that, but if that's the philosophy, then I think the guys at the top who are instituting that philosophy have got to go. Even though I understand that's not how Major League Baseball in 2023 works, unfortunately. But then from the other side of it, yeah, like you said, if you want to, I'm going to get into my discourse issue in a sec, but to lead into that, if you want to take the decision in a vacuum from a capital A analytics perspective, I can see the argument. You don't want Berríos to go through the lineup twice, blah, blah, blah. We all know the analytics discussion. But then, if you want to take a look at the analytics argument that I'm sure they laid out, the idea was him to avoid the two lefties, correct?
That and to make the Twins change their lineup, right? To take one of those guys subs out there, and they wanted to like take
out of the lineup. If I'm not mistaken, the one lefty in the bullpen did not throw yesterday. They had two right-handed relievers face those lefties later in the game. So, like, how worried about it are you? And then, not only that, it's not fucking Freddie Freeman. Like, it was Max Kepler. And, like, I feel like the reason that, for me, this, like, this was always the plan argument outside of the very obvious, we'll just look at what's happening in front of your fucking eyes and adapt, because I think that's a much bigger issue here. But like outside of that, the plan itself makes no sense because they didn't continue executing it. Like if you want to make the argument, you don't want the righties to face the lefties and it's a righty lefty argument, then don't have the other righties face the lefties that like the rest of the game. Cause Kikuchi threw like what, six batters? Like, it just, to me, the whole plan from every way they can justify it, whether it's this was planned ahead of time or we knew going in that, like, this is what we're going to do and this is why, none of it holds muster when you look at what actually happened in the game. And that's, I think, what drives me so crazy is that there's no justification for it to make sense other than from only looking at numbers and deciding to switch it, which I'm not, I'm not into the discourse yet, but like, if you want to say it's not Schneider's call, that's fine. But like at a certain point, if Schneider can just look up and see what's happening and not pull Berríos there, A, I don't think that's going to cost him his job, especially if Berríos continues to pitch the way he was. Because let's also be honest, when Jose Berríos is pitching like he was yesterday, he is the team's best pitcher. Better than Kevin Gausman when he's throwing like that. And also, you're paying the guy $130 million. Like, if it's not for this exact situation, like, why even give him, why pay any pitcher, frankly? Like, what, are you just paying him to get you to the playoffs? Like, what is the purpose? None of it makes any sense to me, is the thing. And they can't even prove their own reasoning for it because of how they handled the rest of the game. And credit to the bullpen, who were excellent, as they have been all year. Like, they shut the Twins down completely. And, you know, there's the argument of, like, well, they just couldn't score. If they could score, it would have been fine. Like, yeah, sure, but both things are bad. Like it's right. Possible for – and this is where I want to get into the discourse thing. Which I don't know if it's me, but it feels to me like baseball in 2023, and maybe specifically this Blue Jays team in 2023, has made everyone crazy and stupid.
We went insane this year. There's no question about that. I agree with you. Like something happened when this, like before the All-Star break, that like we all just sort of lost our minds. I've never felt this insane about a
Blue Jays season. Twitter sure. And fandom has forgotten that two things can exist at one time. All of the discourse yesterday was, I'm pro analytics, but that was a bad move. And then there was all this shit today from Blue Jays people, media people that will remain nameless, but like, oh, it's a great call because it's what the numbers say. And what are you, a fucking like not behind analytics? Like, it's, if you're having the analytics wars in 2023, grow up. It's over. Like, it's over. They're in the game as they should be. And they just don't tell the whole story because nothing tells the whole story because that's how fucking life works. You can't, like, everything is so, like, one thing or the other. It's all of it yesterday was, yeah, but they couldn't score, so why aren't you mad about that? Well, it's like, well, I am. But I'm also mad that's right. that they took out the pitcher who was throwing the best game of his life that they're paying $130 million to.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. The Vlad pickoff was worse than
100%. I'm mad about that too. Like,
yeah, 100%. So you laid out, I think, a fairly good for me, it's as simple as like, I refuse to believe the analytics told you you should go Kikuchi against Correa there. Just yeah, like
so that.
That makes no sense to me. I don't care how afraid you are of Kepler and Kirilov. There's just no way that the paper was like, take out Barrios for Correa. That makes no sense. That makes no sense at all. I mean, everything you laid out is correct. Even the part of it of like, I do sort of see the reasoning, right? The same as you is like, I do sort of see why you would line it up like that in a vacuum of just that inning. The result of the process be damned. But also a huge part of me, and I don't want to make a habit of apologizing for this part of me, so I'm not gonna. Another part of me sees, as you said, the guy that you invested in, the guy that you paid, not only having the game of his life, but having a game of his life against his former team in his former yeah. stadium in an elimination game. You're just not giving your guys a chance of glory here. And I know that that's flowery and we work in a ones and zeros. Does it work or does it not? Here's the most efficient way forward sort of thing. But I like, imagine they had in 2015, they had pulled Marco Estrada right. early.
Yeah.
Just because like, oh, like you sometimes you have to recognize when something as special is happening in front of you. And you could obviously easily argue, well, you know, the Estrada game, you knew they were going to score a run at some point for him. Like, yeah. Touche. But I'm just sort of my point being of also like,
they lost the game before that 14-2. So
you got to give a guy a chance to have the most important game of his life, right? That was the most important game that he'll ever pitch. And you cut him off before he got a chance to really even author it. And I think that's really disappointing to me. It's like, he'll never have a spot like that again in his life.
I think that I completely agree. And I think that goes to sort of what I was saying with like the Anthony Bass thing. Obviously the Anthony Bass thing is more important than a baseball game, but like the fact that that was handled as it was, it's kind of the same message to me of how the philosophies of the organization, just like not allowing the human side of anything to exist. And it's the same as the like sort of philosophy for the year of like the line between having fun and being silly. Like, I just feel like no one in this organization seems to give that human side any consideration because it's not what the numbers tell you. And that doesn't mean I'm anti-analytics, but like, I don't know. I agree with you. I just think there's something broken in there. In the way the franchise works, and like we can't speak to a lot of the Manoah stuff, but some of it you wonder.
Well, you certainly okay. So I'm glad you say you wonder, because there was a quote I talked about this in the Patreon after game one. After game one, Rocco Baldelli said something to the lines of like, you could see physically what the noise yes. of our fans was doing to the other side. And to me, that was indicative of one of three things, right? Either that phenomenon was happening and the Jays were affected by it, or the Twins think that they were affected by it, or alternatively, Rocco Baldelli believes he can affect the Jays by pointing that out, right? One of those three things is true. All of them sort of point to the same thing of the Jays being sort of susceptible to their emotions, which is the exact thing that you were talking about of like them sort of ignoring that as much as they possibly can. And in this instance, in this moment, to me, it is not an accident. It is not a mistake that like the only run of the game is scored immediately after this decision, and the Vlad pickoff happens immediately when the Jays get back to the field. And Yeah, I'll just finish this story quickly. You'll hear, you know, I can't remember who it was. Somebody quoted was a ball player that was in the dugout for the Dodgers when the Rays took out Ian Snell too early in the World Series. Blake Snell too early in the World Series a couple of years ago, and it was like just the emotion of the Twins is raised seeing Berríos come out because they had nothing for him. Right, they're like, oh, thank goodness, we have a fresh guy to look at. And the Jays on the other side are all going, wait a minute, what the hell is going on? Like, we're taking out our top guy. And it's like, that stuff matters. And I know that these guys are supposed to be good enough and big enough hitters and big enough stars that it doesn't even affect them, and how they're feeling has nothing to do with how they play. And I push back on that pretty strongly, because you could see from that moment to the moment Vlad gets picked off, find me one at bat other than Santiago Espinal back up the middle in the ninth inning. Find me one at bat where a Blue Jay has good body language the rest of the game. It's unbelievable. The body language in the second half of that game after Vladdy was picked off, you're watching it and you're like, is this really happening? Are these guys really this broken by that one play? And they were. Horrible at bats. Horrible at bats. Striking out, swinging. No, not even thinking about it. Brutal. Just really, 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 really disappointing. And sort of that, like, of course it goes this way sort of conversation.
Yeah, but it's of course it goes this way, crazy. Because it's the same shit over and over again. Like, it's not of course it goes this way because it's a cursed team or a cursed city. It's of course it goes this way because they bring it on themselves and they do it all the time. And I think to your point, I can't remember if it was Buck or if it was Siddle yesterday, but they pointed out that after, like, when you take out Berríos, you also, not only does it bad psychologically for the Jays, but you let the Twins off the hook because Berríos mm-hmm. is dominating them, and he's getting, and like, there's a generous strike zone yesterday. Like, he was getting calls and he was dominating them like completely. And then it's like, oh, we don't have to face this guy anymore. And then immediately thank they God. Scored. And I think it was Correa also yesterday talking about the pickoff. Yeah. And to your point, he credited the crowd noise. And he was like, they couldn't hear me coming up behind. Vlad couldn't hear any coaches telling him to get back, and he wasn't paying attention. And so, like, yeah, it's just, there's a human side to this. Sorry, nerd guys. And also sorry, non-nerd guys. There's also a numbers side. But, like, it's, yeah, it just, I think you said it best, that just their head is just never looking the way it's supposed to be.
So that's about it. I mean, I don't have anything else in the games. Anything else jump out? Anything else eating at you? You want to make sure you get
it? I mean, not really. I don't think I have anything else to add other than, like, what we all saw. Like, it was bad. It was really bad. All around, except for the pitching, which it was the season.
We're never going to see this again. We're never going to see pitching like this again. And I hope people realize that. You're never going to have a year where all 5-year pitchers are always healthy, and then you get a pitcher off the two pitchers off the 60-day who had Tommy John midway through, and they're both good too.
And
this is never going to happen.
Not only is it never going to happen again, but like, the whole team was really lucky this year. There wasn't any bad injury luck this year. There wasn't any, like, the pitching was great. I think that's what's most concerning for me, is that when you break this season down, and if you want to go back to our preview shows and all the predictions and the worst case, best case, other than the results on the field, everything else, like in terms of injuries and pitching and defense, was the best case.
Pretty much. Everything but your top hitters. Everything but the core and hit, four and five
hitting
guys.
And hitting with runners in scoring position. But yeah.
Everything but I think Vlad, Bo, Springer, Chapman, Kirk, all underperformed. Varsho as well, I think, all underperformed their averages.
And
their
career. And like, I don't know, you hear, I'm not showing it's that many guys if it's luck and bad luck.
Right. I'll tell you.
And I don't know. Yeah. I get concerned about the fact that everything, except for what you said, went to script, and they still ended up less than 90 wins out in two games again.
Obviously, Manoah is the big...
Sure. But like the flip side of that is if they don't throw him in as many games as they do, maybe they finish differently.
Sure. Yeah.
I get why they can't.
It's still a pretty big thing, right? It's your opening day starter and your second in Cy Young, your sixth win pitcher in the year before.
I'd also argue that's not completely luck, no but shows. We'll get into that when we talk about the offseason.
Yeah, completely no shows, and then Bales on the team. Never to be seen again, I'm going to say. I'm going to guess. Just because, like, the sign for me that it's not good is he doesn't show up for the playoffs, right? He doesn't sit with them. He doesn't come to the games anyway, which is either he is not welcome or he is not in the mood to go and support. Because Jano's right. there every day, right? Jano was hurt. He was there. Buffalo Bills all went.
I will say, if you want to talk luck and injury stuff, I think Jano getting hurt is actually a much bigger deal than we would have expected.
Of course. Yeah, if Jano's healthy, they win the American League, probably. But I feel foolish now having sat here and like last week been like, oh, that gives Houston a bunch of money.
Oh my gosh, it just destroyed them.
Houston would have killed them, so it doesn't really matter. Should we do some offseason or should we save that?
I think we'll come back and do the 12-month wrap-up time, I think.
Yeah, we got, was it Chappie, Witt,
Belt,
Kevin,
Ryu,
Belt, Hicks,
Ryu.
I
think that's it.
So six, yeah. It's not.
No, nothing. It's certainly not.
It's not nothing. We'll see. Yeah, and my one final thing, you talked about the discourse, Jake. And I have one final thing that I think I was going to close the episode out, but now I realize that there's one final thing that I want to put a pin in forever, I think. Just really sick of hearing about the division.
Right? Oh, my God. Yeah.
They happen to be the only team in the last 5 years that hasn't won the East and 100 games.
And all the other teams, in the division also have to play as many games against the division.
And by the way, Baltimore's payroll is like $70 million. The Rays payroll is like $74 million. Those teams combined, the 2021 and 2023 American League East champions who combined to win 202 games, this payroll is like $140 million combined. So I don't really have the patience anymore for like, it's just so hard to win the division. It's like, well, everybody else did it. Every other team has done it by accident, seemingly. Red Sox win 108 games by accident. And I get it. It's randomness and it's difficult. But I'm ready to, like, are we ever putting the bumpers down on the side of the bowling
alley? Especially when there's six players.
Are we ever going to hold them accountable to winning the division, to winning 95 games, to being better than playing for their lives at the end? When is that coming in this window? Because we only have 2 years left with these guys. And they scored, I looked this up, Jake, 2 years ago, 2021, they scored 100 more runs this year than this year. So 846 to 746. And this is going to blow your mind. Allowed eight less.
That is actually really surprising.
They've taken steps backwards in both ways. Even focusing on run prevention, they were a better run prevention team in 2021 somehow, while also scoring 100 more runs. So I don't, you know, I get it. It is hard to win in the division, and it does sure feel like luck when Baltimore does it, and it sure does feel like unfair magic when the Rays do it, but. The Yankees and Red Sox have been fucking garbage. They were garbage this year, and the Red Sox were shit last year. These teams have been really bad. Like I'll buy the division is impossible to win conversation in like 2001 when both those teams are winning 100. There's no A-Rod Red Sox out there. A-Rod Yankees and like Manny and Poppy Red Sox. That's not what we're talking about. That's not who they're in the division with. Alex Verdugo is who you're talking about.
Oh, Harold Ramirez. Wow,
the Red Sox and the Yankees.
The Rays.
Exactly right. Oh, it's not fair. These guys have Harold Ramirez. What are we talking about?
A team that just got decimated by the Rangers also.
At what point is it? Don't even get me started. I wanted to talk. I tried so hard. I tried so hard to say I wanted to talk. Anyway, just my little rant there. I get why it's so easy to say, oh man, the AL East. But like, every other team has figured out a way to do it with less money or more money. I just don't know when we're supposed to be holding them accountable for being a division winner.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. And I think it also I don't have anything else to add. That's a really good point. And I agree. And I think that it's, even if you want to take the division winner aspect out of it, they haven't even competed for it. They competed for it for like a day this year. And especially now with the 6 playoff spots, even if you're not going to win the division, I didn't say this, but I will say this here, is that they have won the Atkins era. This core era has won the same amount of playoff games as 9 years of JP Ricciardi. And this is seven. I'm just saying, like, and that was when you could make the division so hard argument. Right. So I don't know, man. I mean that as not a, like, I don't know, get rid of them. I mean that I don't know. It's a mess. I think it's a bigger mess than we sort of allowed ourselves to realize it to be throughout the year.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't know, man. I really don't know. I really don't know what they do or where they go here. I just know that, you know, you remember 2015, 2016, we never talked about them, but you remember them. When they were making their playoff run, the swell behind that team was massive. And it was like, that was the big appeal for these guys that are coming in here, right? It's like, as long as you build a good team, Toronto Loud and Toronto will show up and Toronto will come out. And we talked about it a couple weeks ago. The playoff push didn't feel like a playoff push in the city. And I think people got sort of bad taste in their mouths from the year before. You know, continuing to limp in with unexciting teams, people aren't going to be, like, people are losing their patience, right? The summer flingers, the Maple Leafs fans, the Raptors fans that come in and are looking for a good time and want a team to cheer for, and then if they lose, they go up, back to hockey. Like, those are the fans that they got on board in the mid-2010s. Those are the fans that you're talking about, the bad discourse, that, like, woke up pretty sour and then were like, all right, well, I'm not going to think about this team again anymore. Right. And when the Jays make a move in the offseason, they're going to go,
I don't think they're responsible for the bad discourse, but that's another conversation.
No,
but I do.
They're cruising in and they're going to go, well, it's going to take more than the Dalton Varsho trade to get me interested this year. Right. And I don't think that this is the cash cow, if they're just a pretty good team, that they think it is. And we talked about Shapiro's job admirably, updating the stadium and finally making changes and getting people in the building. We learned this year that the on-field product has to be good. That's what matters. And they have to play exciting. It can't just be good. They have to play exciting. People have to want to go watch them. And nobody wanted to watch them. Anyway, that was my last piece. The division thing has been...
think, just to close that out, the division thing, I think, is just like... kind of what I meant with the JP Ricciardi comparison is not so much to be like... their utter failures. It's that that was year 7 and year 4 with the core. The time for the excuses, whether it's whatever it is, like, there's, we're done with that. Like, there's just no more room for it. So figure it out, losers.
figure your fucking shit out. I don't want to have to do this again. At the end of last year, I begged them. Remember this? Last year, I begged it. I was like, can we just have a wire-to-wire season?
I do remember that.
Well,
how about the exact opposite?
I feel even less inspired by that this year. I just feel like, well, it's just not going to happen for us, I guess. My prevailing thought before, you know, I just brought it up. I can't help but now, but look at 2021 and be like, Not getting better than that. What are they going to do? What can they possibly do this offseason to be better than the 2021 team?
Yeah, I think that's pretty clearly the peak.
And if they and if they're not next year, guess what? It's Vlad and Bo's walk here.
The year I think we'll get into this when we talk the offseason. Barring some major moves, I think the window's closed, personally.
Always fun to chat baseball. That's it for us, I think. Jake, yeah, for you. We did an hour. I'm tired now, and I had a really bad day. Well, not a bad day. I had a really busy day. I bulk loaded. I'll tell you this quickly before we go. I bulk. You know, sometimes you're working your work week. You're like, I'm gonna bulk load one day, and just like, I bulk loaded my Thursday with like, I have some really important meetings, and I'm going to bulk all the work around them so that I'm basically like just locked into my computer the whole day. And once I start focusing, I get into a flow state, and it'll actually be easier to accomplish than segmenting it across the week. Then, my son's daycare canceled at the last 10 minutes before we had him.
Sam photos today.
So we are like, my wife and I are both, she had an event she had to go to for the foundation tonight. So she had to like leave in the evening, but like we both had to work all day. So I'm trying to bulk work plus pitch my meetings plus shift on and off of watching Sam plus you have to cook plus, man, it was a mad host day. All that plus, I mean, one of my favorite days of the year to be online is the day after the Jake. It's a good tweets today. I got to give it up. Some as much as there was, I agree with you. There's always some bad discourse. I saw a lot of different people talking about a lot of different things today, and I think we talk about it here. Like, there's a lot of answers as to what went wrong. Right? It's easy to go. You can pick your thing. You can pick timely hitting. You can pick the star players. You can pick Schneider. You can pick the front office. You can pick situational things here and there. You can pick individual moments. You can pick bad luck. You can say Matt Chapman hit the ball really hard, really far. I mean, three different big spots somehow, and all of them ended up being.
That's true.
And you're all right. And that's the thing, love. I love ball, though. That much stronger than ever. We'll take a breath. We'll talk about the offseason coming up. I guess we'll do that at some point during the playoff runs that we're not in the offseason when we do it. And then, I mean, what do we do best other than decide who's coming to the team, Jake? Well, what, like, who does it better than us than to pick the mid to low tier guy that gets the tryout?
Oh, we got that. We also got, I will say, just to give everyone a little tease, we've been tossing some juicy ones back and forth for how they can fix this team immediately. So we'll get into that as
true. We'll talk about it coming up soon. Before we go, I just want to thank everybody so much for a great year. You know, with the Anthony Bass stuff, actually, I don't know why I'm tiptoeing around it. Like, there was a weird couple weeks where we just got like overwhelmed with like vitriol and hatred, and like we had to stop checking the inboxes and stop checking the phone line. But we also like gained fans from that because, and I'm proud of that because we took an unrelenting stance on that in a way that other people weren't allowed to do. People would either, you're either working at a place where you can't be that strongly, or you were one of the people that were like, we're not really into politics, so we're not really going to talk about it. I'm proud of how we handled that head on. And if you stuck around through that and you came on board for that, I thank you and I appreciate you. And just for everybody who's been around, there are some folks that listen to this show. They've been listening to us for years and years and years, Jake. And that too.
No, but
every message, every time, every time someone sends a message or sends a DM, or I see on Twitter people talking about the show or mentioning something we've said, or any sort of acknowledgement that anybody else out there has ever heard the show means the world because. You know, the weird thing about podcasting is it's sort of like a lonely, even you and I, we talk, but we're both just sitting alone in different rooms, and you record it and you send it out. And especially with the way the internet works now, where like things with links in them don't get seen as much. And you just sort of like always see a view. Sometimes listener is just like a number. And I think our audience does a great job of letting us know that they listen to us and we see you and hear you. And from the bottom of my heart, it means the world. To hear people say things about this show, anything at all, positive, negative, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that, especially all the stuff surrounding the Bass thing. I think that was useful in a way that it really allowed us to sort of pare down the people that we want to have listening to our show and that want to listen to us. And that's great. And if you don't, like, we're on the other side of that whole thing, then, like, we don't want you to listen to our show anyway. So that's fine. But yeah, I think it was, you know, this is now year two of this show. And it's been, I'm glad we had this show and our ride or dies throughout a, let's call it a challenging Blue Jays season.
They're back to being the team they've always
been. Like, yeah.
Because, like, I was thinking about this at some point today. Like, if you just took out the extra wild card slots, it's the same
one. Oh, winning, like, winning 88 games back and missing the playoffs? Yeah.
They finished 12 back in the division. They're sort of in it. If every possible thing goes their way the last 2 weeks and then it doesn't, and you're like, what am I? Why did I do this for 6 months? The only difference is, literally the only difference is, there was two more games this year and they lost both of them. The only difference between this and, like, the mid-2000s.
The Jays, I will say, have played, not counting 2020. It is kind of wild to think they have only played four playoff games since 2016.
You don't count 2020?
That's two games there. I also don't count the Dodgers World Series win that year either, because fake year.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. That just makes sense.
Fake franchise, fake year.
There's an argument to be made that, you know, 2021 could also not really count in the offseason, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, they didn't make the playoffs, so it doesn't matter either way. Either way, that's it for another episode. That's it for another baseball season. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll get our lists of guys to think about in order and bring those to you once again for the last time for the 2023 MLB Blue Jays season. Thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jake.